says 2 minutes early stuff.
It's not 2 minutes. It's 3 o'clock.
It's not only
All right. Thank you, members. I call this meeting of the House Education Policy Committee to order, and there is a quorum present. Our first order of business will be to approve the minutes. May I have a motion to approve the minutes for Tuesday, January 17th? Anybody had a chance to review them? No.
I move to approve the minutes.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Lee moves the minutes from Tuesday, January 17th. Any further discussion? All right, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, thank you. The minutes are approved. All right. So first up, we are going to be able to hear House File 58. Representative Chair Richardson is our chief author. And this is about the dismissal of students in kindergartens grade through three. Now, we do have two important bills on the agenda today, and so we'll be watching the time as we move through this. We hope to have 45 minutes and be able to move this bill for further consideration to the House Education Finance Committee. All right. Representative Berg, would you like to move House File 58 to be before us, recommending to re-refer to the Committee on Education Finance?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to have HF 58 to be before the committee to be recommended to re-refer the bill to Ed Finance Committee.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Welcome, Representative Richardson. Great to see you here. Please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 58 builds upon bipartisan work that was done to ensure that our preschoolers and early learners experiencing behavioral challenges were met with support prior to dismissal. This bill would build on that work and extend that requirement to students in grades K through third grade. Minnesota has a significant educational disparity issue. The data shows that Minnesota's educational outcomes and graduation disparities are among the worst in the nation for students of color. A contributing factor to these unacceptable and troubling disparities based on race and disability in school discipline. To be clear, we will never close our student opportunity gap if our students do not have an equal opportunity to be in our classrooms. When we hear the statistics from the Minnesota Department of Human Rights and know that 55% of suspensions are based on subjective reasons for things like general disrespect versus objective reasons such as assault or possessing a weapon, it shines a light for us to clearly see that the discretion and subjectivity that is built into the system is leading to troubling statistics across our state. For example, students with disabilities are twice as likely to be expelled or suspended as their non-disabled peers. Nationally, Black students are three times more likely to be expelled or suspended than their white peers. But here in Minnesota, they're eight times more likely to be expelled or suspended than their white peers. Indigenous students are five times more likely to be expelled or suspended nationally when compared with their white peers. But here in Minnesota, they are 10 times more likely to be expelled or suspended. This number is even more disturbing, recognizing Indigenous students make up 1.6% of our student population. Looking at the category of ambiguous or subjective reasons for suspensions, Black, Indigenous, and other students of color account for almost 80% of discipline issued by schools for subjective reasons. There is no surprise that we see corresponding disparities in literacy and graduation rates. If our kids are not in the classroom at the same rate during those critical K through third grade years, then they are at greater risk of not reaching developmental milestones related to reading and math literacy. Behind the data are the stories of real students and families that are impacted. One story heard in a previous year's Education Policy Committee of a young Black student in kindergarten upset that a teacher had confiscated her chapstick She ran from the classroom and was suspended for creating an unsafe environment. In that same school district, another student, an older white male student, who caused thousands of dollars of property damage during an outburst where he repeatedly kicked in a door, he was given a timeout. An NPR news story shared the story of a black second grader who was suspended for poking another student with a pencil. Within that same classroom, a white second grader threw a rock hitting another student and then proceeded to break his teacher's glasses. He was not suspended. We also heard the story of a young black child who was suspended for spending too much time in the bathroom. We have a disturbing pattern where students with disabilities are receiving more frequent and harsher punishments than their non-disabled peers, and Indigenous and Black students are receiving more frequent and harsher punishments than their white peers. And the discretion of these choices are where the disparities breed and where they grow. Children who experience just one suspension are twice as likely to come into contact with the criminal justice system. A single suspension can change the trajectory of a student's experience. Furthermore, children that are expelled or suspended are 10 times more likely to drop out of high school and experience academic failure. We know that behavior is communication, and at some point, all of our young learners are going to need support. As a note, dismissal would not include removal from the classroom. And the point of this bill is to focus on creating a fairer discipline process and practice where children are not being treated differently based on the color of their skin or their disability status. I would now like to yield my time to the author testifiers.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Richardson. I see two testifiers at this point. First on my list is Dr. Bernadia Johnson.
And Dr. Johnson, I think, is testifying remotely.
Oh, okay. There we go. It will be magically happening. We're having a little bit of trouble. Is the second testifier here in person?
They're both.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Oh, there we are. Thank you for persevering. We can hear you.
Policy Committee. My name is Dr. Bernadia Johnson, and I'm an associate professor at Minnesota State University, Mankato. I'm also a member of the Solutions Not Suspensions Coalition, as well as a former superintendent of the Minneapolis Public Schools, and the board chair of Minnesota Educational Equity Partnership. I want to thank you for the opportunity to share my experience with addressing the achievement gap and discipline disparities that create exclusionary environments for our students in pre-K through 12th grade. I knew as superintendent I had to tackle this persistent issue because students who are not in school cannot learn, students who are pushed out of school lack a sense of belonging, students who don't learn how to do school cannot develop agency. Therefore, I started with our littlest learners by putting a moratorium on suspending students in pre-K through second grade for nonviolent behaviors. And I promised every family who enrolled their child in kindergarten that they would be reading at a level that is appropriate for 4 months of school. Our state has such large discipline disparities for students of color and for students with disabilities. This happens when teaching is not rigorous, expectations are not clear, consequences don't match the behavior, and when consequences differ based on student demographics. How did I know this as a superintendent? Well, my academic team and I rolled up our sleeves and we reviewed suspensions for every student to identify trends and behaviors to allocate resources and target professional development. This led to an investment in school-based mental health models, rewriting the discipline policy to remove subjective categories like the three D's, disrespect, disorderly conduct, and defiance, and increasing professional development, and an emphasis on keeping students in school so they can learn to read, write, and compute. I often share the example of a kindergarten student who kept putting on her lip gloss and creating a distraction to the teacher. The teacher asked her to put it away, but she didn't, and the teacher grabbed the lip gloss. The student reacted, pushed back her chair to the floor and ran out of the classroom. Well, this led to the student being suspended for being unsafe. Lost instructional time. Or the story of two middle school boys who both broke items in school on the same day. The black child was suspended for vandalism, and the white child was sent home with his mom with a stern talking to because it was found that his parents were found out that his parents were going through a divorce. Exceptions for one kid and punishment for the other. We must be clear and consistent. We must have clear and consistent expectations for our students, and more importantly, we must not socialize our children to believe that school is not a place for them. And when we start suspending our littlest learners, we say school is not for you. We can't develop the skills to help you stay in school to learn. When our littlest learners are struggling and doing things that don't meet expectations, it's often because their needs are not being met. We need to find ways to figure out what those unmet needs are. It could be that there's no sense of belonging, agency, or learning, and how to meet them. We owe it to our youngest learners to keep them in school and not send them the message that from the earliest grades the school is not for them. See, I don't need someone to put up a billboard saying that 40% of the white kids in Minneapolis can't read or their kids are being suspended in large numbers. I don't need something to share that with me. I don't need that to bring attention to the failure to teach students to read and to keep them in school. I know this from personal and professional experience. I emphatically know that you can't learn if you're not in school. And I know that nothing will change if we don't also create an imperative students should not be pushed out of school. You have the power to make common sense change to keep our youngest learners in school. I ask that you use this to benefit the children. Thank you for listening and learning from my experiences, and I will email this statement to your staff. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Johnson. It's always a pleasure and a rewarding experience to hear from you. Thank you. Next up, I have Ideal Abdul, who is also a remote testifier. Are you able to hear us?
I'm here if you have questions, but I know you have a tight agenda, so I'm just going to go on mute and go off screen.
Sounds like, yeah. Oh, wonderful. We have our next testifier. Could you please identify yourself for the record?
Can I just start? It's hard to do the Zoom this year. Mm-hmm.
All right. And so if you would say your name and then begin your testimony.
So I think I'm just going to start because there isn't anyone to tell me that it's my time to talk. I apologize if I'm not able to hear you, but, and I don't see anything in the chat.
No apologies, I don't go for it.
Okay. Well, thank you, Superintendent. You're a hard act to follow, first of all. I don't know why they put me behind you. So my name, dear Madam Chair and members, many thanks for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Aidil Abdul. I'm a Somali autism mom and a tired, pissed-off advocate. First, I want to thank Representative Richardson for her focus and tenacity in this issue. I want to tell you emotional trauma, what the emotional trauma is. It's the end result of events or experiences that leave us feeling deeply unsafe and often helpless. It can result from a single event or be part of an ongoing experience. For Black and Brown families in public school districts in Minnesota, including me, trauma is often based on events that are grounded in bias and discrimination. No human should experience trauma even once. This committee, I want to tell you, has traumatized me for years. Because each time I testify and restate what happened to my child in Jefferson High School, I am traumatized. My son, who has nonverbal autism, did not understand suspension then, does not understand it now, was suspended by teacher Kelly Morris, who is protected by the teachers' union, and principal Jason Anderson, who is protected by lobbyists and associations. On Thursday, May 3rd, 2018, at 5:18 p.m., That is the day that it happened, and I'm traumatized each time I have to repeat this. In fact, based on public data that I got, they make more money than they did before, and they have better positions. Do you know how this makes me feel and other similarly situated parents? It makes us feel helpless and unappreciated. I want to tell you that it's not lost in me and should not be lost in you that no DFLer in Minnesota and maybe other states can be in control without the vote or the black and the brown folks. Yet our children, black and brown children and students with disabilities like my son, are failing in school. They're getting suspended disproportionately. Why? I want you to think about that. We are watching you this year. There is no one else to blame. We cannot blame the Senate. You cannot blame Chamberlain. You cannot blame one single Republican. All three branches of government are controlled by Democrats who would not have been in power without the black and the brown voters. You know, in Somalia, we say, "Aqoon la'an wa istin la'an." While it loses its poetic meaning, in a nutshell, it means education is the sight, the smell, and the sound of life, prosperity, and success. Our children are being denied this fundamental human right to life and success.
All right, thank you. Just a little process issue right now. We do have a number of public testifiers that we'd like to hear. And I'm going to hold member questions and discussion until after we've heard from all the testifiers. All right. So we have Ms. Mina Lean, special education teacher, Minneapolis Public School. And
all right.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Please proceed.
So my name is Mina. I am a second year special education teacher working in the Minneapolis Public School District. As a teacher and case manager in a classroom for students with developmental disabilities and autism at Henry High School in North Minneapolis. My first year at Henry High School was spent in an EBD classroom. For those unfamiliar with the term, EBD is an acronym for students labeled with emotional behavioral disorders. An EBD label has historically and disproportionately affected and negatively impacted black and brown students, and has also perpetuated the cycle that is school to prison pipeline. I don't have time to speak on all that I have already witnessed and experienced during my short time as an educator, but my biggest takeaway is that punitive frameworks do not work and rely only on punishment to maintain order. Punishment, whether it's suspension or expulsion, is not an effective framework in schools. It's harmful to a child's mental, emotional, and social development. It affects their self-esteem and their relationships with others, specifically with adults. Punitive frameworks do not foster reflection, growth, or change in behavior. And I believe that by eliminating punitive discipline frameworks in K through 3, our young people, specifically our young students of color, we can improve lifelong outcomes and take daily action to create a world and space for all of our students to thrive in. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have a Director Adosh Oni from Department of Education.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Oni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. And thank you for the opportunity to testify on HF 58, which prohibits the suspension of students in kindergarten through grade 3, building upon the existing prohibition on suspensions of pre-kindergarten students. And I really want to thank Representative Richardson's work in this space and collaboration in the past and really leading on this effort year after year. Unfortunately, Minnesota ranks very poorly when it comes to racial disparities in many categories. Punitive discipline practices rely on the belief that exclusion, when used as a consequence, teaches a student to perceive as necessary to maintaining a safe, orderly learning environment. This belief leads to a significant underinvestment in proactive supports necessary to promote students' social, emotional development and mental health and implement alternatives to suspension. The American Psychological Association Zero Tolerance Task Force found no systemic evidence that a suspension accomplishes these goals. As mentioned, Minnesota has some of the worst disparities in the nation, and it has some of the worst discipline disparities in the nation. Despite no correlation with improved student outcomes or school climate ratings, close to 20,000 K-12 students in Minnesota received one or more out-of-school suspensions during the 2018-19 school year. In the same year, there were 5,766 reported suspensions, expulsions, or exclusions for grades K through 3. Here's just one example for the disparities. In the same school year, 18 to 19, 12.8% of all Minnesota kindergarten through grade 12 students identified as Black or African American. That's about 11.2%. In the same year, 44.2% of kindergarten expulsions were for Black or African American students. It was 46.3% for first grade, 50% for second grade, and 44.8% for third grade. We know that there are unintended negative consequences of exclusionary discipline practices such as suspension. Students who are suspended consistently hear messaging that they are not welcomed or valued in the school community. These students have diminished perceptions of school climate, are shown to have less positive relationships with staff and peers, and diminished levels of trust. Meanwhile, they are more likely to exhibit antisocial behavior, experience academic difficulty, drop out, receive an arrest, and experience incarceration. Students who experience suspension and expulsion are even at increased risk for long-term physical and mental health issues. Madam Chair and committee members, we should be moving toward less reliance on suspension as a disciplinary tool and more toward the non-exclusionary discipline practices that keep the child in the educational setting like that are in this bill and that the governor and lieutenant governor have proposed in the past. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill and this initiative to prohibit suspension of K-3 students.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. And we're going to be going to remote testimony again. If our Zoom crew can hear us, and it will be Mr. Jason Lutzik, Elementary School Principal, Bemidji.
Thank you, Madam Chair and the Education Policy Committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on House File 58. I'm a principal at a kindergarten through elementary in Bemidji, Minnesota, and we have three sections of our district-wide ASD students who attend my school as well. So we see a lot of students with disabilities that are part of our school. And our goal as a school is to make sure that our school is safe on a daily basis. And as a principal, it's my job to maintain that safety at a school. Suspensions don't guarantee safety, but they are a part or a way that we can take time to step back and look at what we need to do and how to plan to bring a student back to school that might have had a situation that has caused some issues within the school system based on being not safe with their peers. So we've always looked at it from a perspective of educating children that we would approach it with a tiered process. Basically, tier one, looking at the 80% of students working at our school, we use responsive classroom. Students can work off the social piece of it. But our goal really is then tier two is if students are struggling, to give them support with a social worker and some groups or individual work. And then our tier three would be our CTSS skills, or else we have them attend therapy if they can get a diagnostic assessment completed. So there are a lot of steps to happen before we get to an actual suspension. But I have to bring it back to the Minnesota Department of Human Rights looked at suspensions, and they define suspensions in areas of subjective and objective. And I think that's what's important to keep in mind here when we're going through this, that the objective ones are very hard for us to be able to look at and say that we don't need to take some time off to develop a plan, because those are very much a safety risk for our school. On the other side, Within the bill that you're looking at today, the non-exclusionary discipline, there's some funding from grants for training school staff. And that's a good thing, but we also need the funding to be able to provide non-exclusionary discipline to happen within the school, because I would not have additional staff to be able to help fund that. So as you're looking at this bill, I appreciate the communication and the ability to be able to testify today, but I also look forward to working with you in the future as we, because obviously it's going to take some time to work through this bill. I look forward to working with you in the future on this, and if you have questions, please let me know.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. And I'm going to move on to the next testifier, and a reminder to everyone is that we do have a number of testifiers, lots to hear, and if we can be limiting to 2 minutes, and I might have to actually interrupt if we're going much beyond that. But I think so far we've been tracking pretty well. The next is Ms. Nancy Antone, Elementary Principal, Northfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
If you can identify yourself again, please.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and Education Policy Committee. I'm Nancy Antoine, the principal at Bridgewater Elementary in Northfield, and this is my 16th year here, and I've been a principal for 20 years as well. And I'm, you know, in theory, the anti-suspension, I think it's great in theory, and I suspend extremely few students, and because I want those kids in school. These are my children, and I want them here in school. However, there are times when I have to send a student home, and that can be, and if you've never experienced having a child slug you in the head to the point where your teeth are jarred and your eyes move back and forth, I hope you never have to experience that. But when I get to a situation where I have to step in a room where I have a student who is slugging one of my teachers repeatedly, and this is not an ongoing event, this is a first-time event, I have to take it upon myself to actually send that child home so we can develop a plan for how we're going to work with that child the next day. I don't have the benefit of having somebody else on the bench that I can just bring in and say, hey, come on in, your turn next. And I want to keep these children here, but at the same time, there are very few instances when I need to send these children home. And I need that tool in my tool belt to make this work so that my staff can remain safe as well. I've had to write accident reports because my staff have been injured by students. And it's not fun to have to do that. And yet at the same time, like I said, we make sure that we have the programming in place for those children while they're gone. But the most important piece is making sure they get back the next day and we're ready for them to be in school the next day. I'm not into suspending children for any length of time whatsoever. But I tell you, when the rubber meets the road, I want to make sure that we've got things planned so that we can manage that student the very next day and manage them successfully, because I want them to be successful in school, but I also want them to be safe, along with my staff members to be safe. So I really thank you for this opportunity to testify today. And if you have any questions, like Mr. Luxick said, just let us know. We'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. The next testifiers are here in person, and I'm going to say the first name, but then the next person that'll be on deck. Ms. Susan Providence would be the next testifier, and then after that, Ms. Kulula Pringle. And so, Ms. Providence, if you are here and can join us at the testifying table. To move things along, Ms. Pringle, if you are here. All right, please identify yourself for the record, and please excuse me if I have to stop you after 2 minutes. I do apologize.
No problem. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Education Policy Committee. My name is Kulia Pringle, and I'm the Minnesota State Director for the National Parents Union, and I'm here to testify in support of House File 558 on behalf of the family who loses something every time, something very valuable when our littlest babies are suspended. What is the loss? The loss is access and opportunity. the access and opportunity to learn, the access and opportunity to thrive, and access and opportunity to make mistakes with the love and support of the village to see their potential past their mistakes. There is a disparate impact, as Adosh spoke about early, when it comes to children that looks like me. We must act now. The time to act was yesterday, but we still have an opportunity to reimagine education today and tomorrow. We cannot continue to fail our children, and when they become adults, lock them up and say, well, we failed you as kids, but now that you're an adult, we don't care. Something has to happen. I have a slogan that I work on with literacy, and it's called Read or Die. Because literacy, if our littlest babies, the only time they're getting a chance to learn how to read at kindergarten through third grade, and they're getting suspended, and we're not looking at the fact that they may be getting suspended and acting out because they're not learning how to read, and then we're kicking them out, they're surely to die, whether that's physically, mentally, emotionally, and financially, because of the impact it's going to have on them as an adult. There's a saying that my friend says, there's no such thing as other people's babies, and it's time that we take care of all of our babies. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So now we have Tanya Droughton, who will be our next testifier, and after that, we'll be on remote with Nikai Kuth Beal. But first, in person, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Tanya Droughton. Thank you very much, Chair and Education Committee. Last year, I came and spoke about this bill, House File 58, and the importance of the after effects that children feel when they don't feel welcomed by the village, by their school, by the adults that we mandate are in their lives. I was a parent that felt a lot of those after effects, especially last year. I have a son that is a young 20-year-old that got it suspended in kindergarten right away from a teacher that one of my older daughters had. He had her, and I thought she was a good teacher, but she did not work well with my son. He got suspended for little things that five-year-olds do. He was one of the youngest kids in the class, playing around in class, maybe, you know, playing too rough with somebody here and there, nothing real serious, and he got suspended. And I didn't understand that. He didn't understand that. He didn't understand why he wasn't given a second chance, why the suspension, why he was taken from his friends, from his class. And he got multiple suspensions that year from a teacher I thought worked really well with students, especially students of color. I learned that she did not learn or know how to deal with my son. He got suspended multiple times in kindergarten, first grade, and second grade. Third grade, he actually had a teacher that cared enough to recognize he was actually a brilliant student. At 5 years old, he entered kindergarten, but he could memorize things and do things that most kids his age could not do. Him and her had a brilliant relationship. He did not get suspended that year. As soon as he moved from her path, the suspensions continued. My son got suspended almost every single year until he dropped out of school. He dropped out of school at 15. I'm dealing with the after effects of a high school dropout and not knowing where I could have placed the warmth and made him feel welcome to make his life different. As a parent, you look at all the different things you could do. And I now have grandchildren in my custody, and yeah, you just hope that what happened with your son is not repeated. But if you guys don't understand what parents are going through, what kids go through, when they're not felt that warmth, when they're not there for them, when they're getting sent home for simple things that kids do, that other kids do, and they don't feel that discipline, we have to be there for them, and we have to make that change. I'm hoping that the kids I have now in my custody will never get suspended. I'm working with teachers. I tell them, call me, text me. I will be there. I will show up. I will be there. I will talk to them. Whatever you need, please don't suspend my babies and make that cycle continue. So I'm asking you to really consider this. These are our babies. And we're not saying that in circumstances that doesn't warrant physical altercations where a teacher gets hurt, gets placed in the hospital. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about simple things that kids do, simple things that white kids don't get suspended for, but our kids do. And I'm asking you to look at the statistics, look at the disparities, and make that decision, because you are the people that are able to make that decision now so that generations don't feel this. Thank you.
Thank you. So we're going to turn to our Zoom testifiers remote. And then I'm also going to say up after that will be Joshua Crossan from the executive director of Ed Allies will be here in person after we hear our remote testifying from Nyakuth McBeal. And can you hear us?
Yes, hello.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, thank you for the invitation to speak to you today, Madam Chair. My name is Nyakuth Beal, and I'm speaking to you from Faribault, Minnesota, where my brother is a student in the first grade. My brother has several disabilities, and he has been suspended roughly 25 times in the past 2 years since he entered school there as a kindergartner. He has missed upwards of 70 days in the past 2 years due to suspensions, and this is reflected in his academic progress. The way this has affected him has shown up in his academics, interpersonal communication, and emotional regulation. He was never made aware of the fact he was being suspended and usually would find out in the morning when he couldn't go to school because it was never brought to him, it was brought to the parent. The fact that he was being suspended over and over is evidence for the fact that he's not learning anything by being suspended. By labeling a child as difficult and having a record of suspensions, the next educator will view that and continue what was previously done, thinking it is effective and necessary. It creates a record which will follow them and interfere with future success. This is seen in the way my brother was suspended on the very first day of school, as a new teacher anticipated doing so and readily resorted to this before implementing a behavioral intervention plan. My brother is very sad when he misses school and cries to attend because he genuinely wants to learn and be around other children. However, he is constantly berated and suspended for simply responding to an environment which is not made for him to succeed. Much of the language used in IEP reports lists him as aggressive and non-compliant. This is language used to describe typically a grown man and not an autistic six-year-old child who is protecting himself from being assaulted by other kids. We have known for years now that suspensions and expulsions are disproportionately used on students of color and students with disabilities. Allowing schools to use suspension on young children allows discriminatory staff to hide behind claims of misbehavior instead of using the necessary time and resources for creating a comprehensive plan for support. No child should be getting suspended 3 days out of the week for weeks on end. That is no way to receive a proper education. He's so excited and eager to learn. No one asks what is happening at school that he is responding this way. The only response is to suspend him repeatedly. Because of the language and cultural barriers my mother experiences in dealing with the school, she's not empowered to speak up for him on her own, which is a theme for many other people. Many have suggested that she take him to a school outside of the district, as they have had to do. However, it is important for school districts to offer the same services to all students. I found myself to be very powerless in making suggestions to consider emotional distress rather than, you know, describing him as non-compliant, implying that he is consciously making decisions. It took months to get an IEP drafted after 7 suspensions in kindergarten, which happened before an attempt at a behavioral intervention plan and a functional behavior assessment. He was 6 years old with an IEP that wasn't updated since he was 3 years old. Yet suspensions were being used as if there were plans for intervention before that happened. I cannot imagine the experience parents go through who do not have the knowledge or the resources to put up a proper fight for their children. Mm-hmm. I support legislation that bans suspension of K-3 students because these are used for children who are still developing. Some don't even have full comprehension of language in order to best understand how to conduct themselves. And I humbly ask you to do the same.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
All right. We have ready to go our next testifier at the witness stand, at the testimony stand. So if you would identify yourself for the record, but then also I would like to say that it's Juventino from Latino Lead would be our next testifier here in person.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Josh Crossan. I'm the executive director of Ed Allies, which is an education advocacy group that's dedicated to making sure that each and every kid in the state has access to an excellent education. I'm here today to testify in support of HF 58, which would eliminate the use of suspensions and limit the use of expulsions for our youngest learners. At EdAllies, we depend on the research and data to help guide the systemic student-centered change that our kids need. And the research is clear, dismissals don't work. You'll hear time and time again today that dismissals are going to be used as a tool. It is like building a house with a banana. They frankly just don't work, and they just make a mess. When students are suspended or expelled, their relationships with their educators are ruined. They are less likely to graduate high school. They're more likely to enter the criminal justice system, and they're less likely to contribute to society in meaningful ways. They're also less likely to have their behavior improved in the long term. As for the peers that are left behind, research also shows that they also do worse in school when their peers are dismissed at higher rates. Instead, schools must use discipline as a teaching tool, especially for our youngest learners. Think about it this way. I know a lot of you have kids at home. What works better for your kids? Does kicking them out of your house for 2 days solve their behavior? Or does having your kids listen and understand the harm that they've caused and apologize for that harm work better to improve their behavior and hold them accountable? As kids are learning how to be kids, we have to use every opportunity we can to improve their behavior. And again, dismissals just don't work. Second, I believe that all kids in Minnesota have access to a free and appropriate education, and this access is granted to them by our Minnesota Constitution. If you believe that too, how can school administrators have the ability, the unilateral ability, to take away that right without significant cause and due process? Last year, we took away that right 68,900 times. 3,347 times we took away that right for attendance-related issues. 18,000 times we took away that right for the catch-all disruption. 2,900 times we took away that right for literally unknown reasons. And 6,700 times we took away that right from our youngest learners, sullying their first experiences in school altogether. Minnesota also suspends and expels Black and Native students at twice the rate that we suspend Black and Native students nationwide. Twice the rate as we suspend and expel Native and Black students nationwide. And whereas only 15% of our kids have disabilities, 50% of all suspensions and expulsions are for kids with disabilities. So I'll leave this here today. You'll hear arguments that dismissals are a tool for administrators that they need to use. And you'll also hear egregious and disturbing stories that paint students as violent. First, in this bill, we allow for dismissals in the rare cases where an ongoing safety threat is an issue. That's currently in the legislation allowing for those dismissals to occur. And secondly and lastly, I encourage you to do what's hard, which is prioritize the needs of kids, especially our kids of color and kids with disabilities, that are rarely prioritized in the state. So thank you again, Madam Chair, for hearing this important bill, and thank you again, Representative Richardson, for introducing it.
Thank you. So we are rapidly running out of time, and if we can have less than 2 minutes testimony, that would we would get to the end of our public testimony list and have heard everybody that signed up. The last testifier is Paula Cole, but right now we have the person sitting at the table. Identify yourself.
Hello, I'm not Irma. Hello, I'm Paula Cole. Irma could not be here, but because Educators for Excellence partners with Latino Lead, I just want to speak for both of us. So again, I'm Paula Cole. I'm the Executive Director for Educators for Excellence Minnesota. Thank you so much, Madam Chair Pryor, for allowing me this opportunity. Thank you to you, Representative Richardson, for bringing this initiative again. Educators for Excellence brings to you teachers. Mina, whom you heard earlier, is one of our members, and because we really care about letting you hear stories from the classroom. And so not all teachers could come, and so I'm just here on their behalf. I came with notes on my phone, but in my other role in this community, I'm chair of the Richfield Board of Education. And I want to share with you something you haven't heard before. There's been so many good arguments. You've heard the data, you've heard the numbers, you've heard the stories. I am here to tell you that being chair in Richfield, where we graduated the 2020 and 2022 class without an achievement gap for students of color, 94% of African American students graduated on time. I'm here to tell you that without your help and your help, school districts are not going to make that step. Every time we have a meeting, we go through the best workforce. We go through all of the things that we are mandated by the state, by you, to report. And when it is mandated, we do it. When it is voluntary, it's hard. It's harder. It's harder to go against that wave. And so I'm here to plead with you. We're talking about, I am in support of House Fire 58, in case somebody just joined the video right now. And what I want you to hear is that we talk about kindergartners and through third grade, but you know what I hear as a former teacher of 7 years at MPS? I'm thinking of 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, anyone here who has a child, a nephew, a grandchild of that age, a neighbor. Those are the kids that we're talking about today. And this bill is not just saying no suspensions. This bill is just trying to get the subjective out of it. I am a person of color. My child has special needs. My child got in trouble one time because he told a girl that her dress wasn't cute. And that is very subjective of the teacher of defining what mean to a peer is to a kid who's on the spectrum. There's so many stories like that. So I'm just here, please. If you have the power, you're our only hope. If we don't tell the districts, if we don't make a statute, we are not going to see fairness and this end of disparities happen. And I chair Richfield because Richfield's struggling with that. And I chair that we do well with academics to show you that we have the best of intentions and practices, but we are not doing our job into the discipline because there's so many coming at us and we just need you. And that's it. Thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you. Thank you. And that is the end of our testifier list. And now it's time for member questions and discussion. And of course, I will allow Chair Richardson the last word. And so far, I don't have any questions. Okay. Representative Bennett.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I didn't want to go before anybody else, if anyone else was going to say anything.
We can hear from Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I didn't want to miss the opportunity to thank Chair Richardson, Representative Richardson, for bringing this bill forward. I know this has been a labor of love for you for the last 4 years, and I want to just show my appreciation about the laser focus you have on our kids, especially our young kiddos in our classrooms that are in those formative years learning how to be in school and learning how to be students. And the thought of punishing a student for a length of time when they're still trying to learn how to do what they're supposed to be doing just doesn't make sense to me academically or social emotionally. So just want to thank you for doing this. I know you've put a lot of work in it. I know we're going to see it in Ed Finance next because I know we talk a lot around here about unfunded mandates. So we're going to talk about the training that's needed. And you're going to hear me talk about training for teachers, training for paras, training for all support staff in a lot of different areas. Because we got to make sure that our staff is trained to meet kids where they're at. And that's what this bill is about, meeting kids where they're at.
I'm going to go to Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank our testifiers for coming and testifying. Thank you, Representative Richardson, as well. I'm not sure if our principals are still here, and I obviously come at it from this lens. And I think we have to understand, and I was going to ask our principal testifiers, but suspension is an important tool for principals to be able to use, and it is used as a last resort. So when we walk through and we're working with families to discipline students, it's not to be punitive, it's to come alongside a family. So I think it's important to keep that in mind. And one of the most important processes in the suspension in the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act, it outlines what needs to be done. And there is a partnership with the family that the family comes to the table and we collaboratively work together. We heard some horrific stories. That's poor management. That's poor discipline. Doing a blanket mandate is not the way to address this issue. And I've looked at this report and I have a lot of thoughts that we can talk about, but that would be more appropriate offline. So Representative Richardson, I think I'd love to chat with you about that.
Great. Thank you. I'm next going to turn to Representative Fraser, and knowing that we have another important presentation coming, I'm trusting members to be succinct in their points, but do want to make sure everybody has time to make their statements. So Representative Fraser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I feel like you're putting the screws to me now, but I will be succinct. Representative Richardson, thank you for bringing this bill. I do know it has been a labor of love for you, and I can speak to the practical impact. I used to work in Minneapolis Public Schools, and the superintendent at that time, Superintendent Bernadia Johnson, implemented something similar to this. And she did it. She was very thoughtful about it. We looked at the data. The data showed us that many of the students were being suspended for things that were not violent, not dangerous, very subjective. And we could tell by the data that students that looked like you and I were being suspended at a disproportionate rate than their peers. And of course that impacted outcomes. Members, we have a chance here. We have a chance here to correct something with a policy change that for far too long has created huge disparities within our state and continue to do so. This bill gives us the opportunity to do that. It does not take away the tool that many keep referring to. Statute 121A61, subdivision 3, paragraph R, allows for suspensions to still be used if there is assault or if there is danger from that student. So it does not take away a tool. The tool is still there. It just allows for it to be used in particular situations. It should be a last resort situation. It allows for that to be used. So keep that in mind, and let's take this opportunity to correct the wrong. Again, thank you to all the testifiers, and thank you, Representative Richardson, for continuing to push this important issue.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, I recognize that there's a problem. I recognize that expulsionary techniques have largely failed. I have had bills, amendments, and I'm sorry if I'm going to repeat myself just a little bit, but I'll be quick with it. You know, I want to know, what do we do with those children, those students who do inflict serious bodily harm on a staff member, on a teacher? I know, again, some of you have heard this, many of you have, of a second grade student who was a larger boy who picked up his teacher, dropped her, and broke her neck. What is the solution? What should be done in instances like that to ensure safety, but also to help the student? I don't know who can answer that. If Representative Richardson, maybe Mr. Uni, does anyone have an answer to what this bill does to address those that do commit violent acts?
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to be clear, Minnesota statutes 121A16 subdivision 3R would still apply. And within that statute, there's a provision that states that students must be removed from the classroom immediately if there is an example like you have given. And to the point that Representative Fraser just made, this bill is not saying that you cannot suspend students. You cannot suspend students. It's saying that it would be the last resort. And I've heard today that suspension should, in fact, be the last resort. And what we are seeing is a situation where it's the last resort for some, but not the last resort for all. So this is about leveling the playing field to ensure that suspension is the last resort for all students, not just a certain demographic.
Okay. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Pryor. I want to thank Chair Richardson for bringing this important bill with her fellow authors. And I want to thank Representative Erdahl for his support for and concern for our teachers in every corner of Minnesota. I want to be the third speaker that mentions statute 121A.61 sub 3 paragraph R. that allows for the removal for violent acts or acts of assault, mandates it, and making sure that we continue the great work that our principals are doing, like Representative Bakeberg touched on, that principals partner with our parents when there's a concern and continue to address the problems using methods that are not disproportionately targeting some of our populations. And moving forward, doing what we need to do to meet students where they are and protecting our state's most precious natural resource, our children. Thank you, Chair. I urge support.
Thank you, Representative Hill. Representative Knudsen. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This has been answered, I believe, but I just wanted to clarify. Is there anything in statute right now preventing school districts from implementing this policy on their own?
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I would say is that there are schools that have implemented policies and there are a number that have not. And so there's actually data from across the state of Minnesota that tracks schools with very significant disparities. So yes, it is something that can be done, but it's not being done because we're continuing to see very deep and persistent disparities around the suspension rates for disabled students, for Black students, and for Indigenous students as well.
Thank you. I just once again thank that another blanket mandate that affects every single school district, even school districts that aren't necessarily dealing with this as a high issue, is unfair. I think local school districts should and deserve the opportunity to address these issues as they feel fit. So thank you.
I'm going to turn now to Representative Benny.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Chair Richardson, for bringing this forward. As I'm listening to all these different testifiers, and particularly the parents and the stories told, there's some horrendous things happening, and they shouldn't be. But quite honestly, I don't believe this. If we pass this bill into law, and it very well may make it that way, I don't believe it's going to solve the problem, because I think the suspensions are a symptom of a deeper problem. And I'm hearing that problem right here. And the ones that I noticed, I'm hearing a school problem, you know, where there's poor processes and poor management that takes place. I hear some of the things happening. I thought that would have never happened in our school, but obviously it's happening in some schools where a child is suspended for a ridiculous reason or constant suspensions and nothing's happening. That should never happen. I'm hearing a teacher issue, a lack of training for appropriate discipline. And I'm hearing a student issue of inappropriate behavior, and this isn't going to solve any of those problems. We may take the suspension tool away, which is a tool that should be there in rarely in a toolbox, and it's going to go away, but the problem is not going to go away. So I would say that we're getting at the wrong thing. I hear data saying that you know, these students are being suspended and it's coming out later on in life in prison and things like that, but correlation is not causation. We all know that. There are deeper problems here. And suspension is a symptom. It's like going to the doctor and you have this bad cough and they give you cough medicine for the symptom, but they don't get to the root problem that's causing the cough. And so I would propose that the root problem is a school issue on more training on how to manage discipline issues. And with teachers, discipline training, appropriate, I mean, a child with lip gloss, my goodness, that should never be a suspension. But that's poor training, not even that teacher's fault. Their training is lacking, and then students. So I just want to say that I'm a no vote because I don't believe this is going to solve a problem. I think it's just going to take away another tool, be another mandate on districts, potential lawsuits because of it, and we aren't going to get anywhere with the true issue. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your comments. And we will turn to Representative Richardson for closing words. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just add that there are lawsuits now because this is being used in discriminatory ways. So lawsuits are existing right now. And when we talk about this root of unfairness, what is unfair is for a student not to have an equal opportunity to be in a classroom. That is fundamentally unfair in a state where our Constitution guarantees every child the right to an education. As a mother raising a Black son, I have dealt with this personally. My son in elementary school got a call from school one day and was told, your son is talking too much in class. It's creating an issue. Need to do something about that. So when my son came home that night, I talked to him and I said, hey, I'm hearing from the teacher that you're creating a distraction in class. You're talking too much. When you go to school tomorrow, I need you to be focused. I need you to be focused on your schoolwork and not talking with your neighbors. My son's a friendly kid, likes to talk to kids. The next day he went to school and he focused on his work. And I got a phone call that night too. And the phone call was, your son came to school today and he didn't say anything. And we were worried about him, so we sent him out of the classroom because we wanted to know why he wasn't speaking. And the message that my son got from those interactions, it didn't matter how he appeared in school, he was a problem. He was a problem if he was talking, he was a problem if he wasn't talking. And in fact, he got sent from the classroom because he wasn't talking. This is what is going on within our schools today. And if people think that is okay, it is not. We have students who are going into schools and they're being told from the earliest ages that they don't belong. And we have an opportunity to do something about that finally. So I would urge support for this bill.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. We'll now move to a vote. So we have, I will start by, let's see, it was Representative Berg. Would you renew your motion to refer House File 58 to the Committee on Education Finance?
Yes, Madam Chair, I re-refer my motion to refer HF 58 to Education Finance.
Okay. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Nay.
Nay.
All right. The motion does prevail, and House File 58 is on its way to Education Finance Committee. Thank you. Thank you for everybody that testified today. Thank you, Chair Richardson, Representative Richardson, I should say, in this setting, for bringing this forward again and for keeping this issue in front of us. Thank you very much. All right. And I think that we'll be able, if we go a little bit long in just the presentation of the bill today, our next bill up is House File 320. I know that we have a great presentation, a number of people that will be presenting today as part of that. And if people are able to, we might go over 5 minutes or so past the time. My intent is, knowing that we have these two important bills, is that we're going to hear the presentation on the bill today, but that we will lay it over and then hear it again. I think it's going to work out for Tuesday right now is the plan, and that at that point we can do amendments after the presentation today. All right. And with that, we have Representative Hassan with House File 320, and we would like... Representative Keeler, would you please move House File 320 before the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move that we have House File 320 be before us at the committee.
And just in terms of the path, after we hear it, it will also be heard in Education Finance. But right now it's before us on the committee. So Representative Hassan, would you please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name's Hoden Hassan. I represent District 62B. It's an honor to be here. The last 2 years, I've been on that side of the committee, so it feels a little weird sitting here and presenting. Madam Chair and members, I'm pleased for the third year in a row to be the lead author on House File 320, known as the Increased Teachers of Color Act. Minnesota ranks the worst in the nation with disparities in education, and we need to be bold and unapologetic about reducing disparities for our students who are Black, Indigenous, and people of color. This bill is important to me and many others because of the following. As we all know, representation matters, and our youth and families are yearning for a more representative teaching workforce. Research is clear that all students benefit from teachers of color and Indigenous teachers. The proposed policies are essential to closing the persistent and unacceptable opportunity and achievement gaps. And the policy provisions in this bill are crucial to ensuring a strong return on state investment. The vast majority of this year's bill language is from the 2021 and 2022 Increased Teachers of Color Act, which were heard in this committee and adopted in Education Omnibus Bill in the last two sessions. It's important to note that this bill has been around for a decade or more, and it's the work of community leaders, advocates, teachers, parents, and students. The proposed policies in this bill also have been vetted and supported by more than 50 organizations and education leaders over the years, as well as the Nonpartisan Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. These policies promote systemic change. We need along with increased investment in order to significantly and steadily increase the percentage of BIPOC teachers. Key policy proposals include establishing an official state goal for an annual increase to the percentage of BIPOC teachers so that by 2040, our teaching workforce reflects our students. Strengthening the world's best workforce an achievement and integration program statute requiring district strategic plans to address various opportunity gaps. Strengthening various grant programs, including the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color, CUCMAC, grant program to meet the recommendation of Office of Legislative Auditor in 2021. Promoting, removing barriers of licensure exams that don't predict effective teaching and have contributed to the overall teacher shortage in the state by keeping thousands of effective teacher candidates of all races out of the classroom over the years. Prohibiting discrimination against teachers for teaching about people from protected classes. Prohibiting American Indian school mascots and affirming the right for American Indian students to wear tribal regalia at graduation ceremonies. Requiring principals to be evaluated for culturally responsive leadership, requiring school districts to report to the state their numbers of teacher hires and terminations by race and ethnicity. This good idea in Section 12 and 15 was actually first proposed by Minority Leader Damat last year, and it's the one difference in this bill compared to last year's bill. I am excited that today we'll be centering the voices of BIPOC teachers and youth with special testifiers both here and remotely. I hope their calls for change will persuade you to join me in signing onto this historic and transformative bill if you haven't already, and voting for it next meeting to refer House File 320 to the Education Finance Committee for further action. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. So I have, so our next testifier, Ms. Sarah Lancaster, and then after that, Glenn Edwards Shivers. And as you know, you can, succinct testimony is much appreciated, but we are very glad that you're here, and welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Sarah Lancaster, and I am a first grade teacher in Onamia Public School District 480. In addition to educating the youth at Onamia Public School District for the last decade, I also have the esteemed honor of serving as the 2022 Minnesota Teacher of the Year. The critical need to increase the population of Black, Indigenous, people of color, or BIPOC teachers is an issue that resonates with me very strongly, being the only licensed teacher of color in my entire school district. As a 2009 Onamia High School graduate myself, it is not easy to forget the feelings of isolation when I attended elementary and high school. The magnitude of silence in not having one single teacher that I could identify or connect with as a person of color often felt like it was only heard by my ears alone. When we think about teaching, we must remember that there are multiple ways to show up for our students. It is impossible for one person or one type of person to show up for every child. In order to provide rich learning experiences for all students, we must ensure that the population of our educators is as beautifully diverse as the students we teach. Experiences like the day when a young student with dark, radiant hair walked into my classroom. She looked at me with her coffee-colored eyes behind her purple-rimmed glasses, and after the school day had ended, her mother called me, and she was in tears. And I was nervous and hesitant, because sometimes the feelings of my littles can be so very big. And it is my job as their teacher to reassure not only my students, but also their families. That mother's words brought forth tears that even the memory can still take my breath away. Her daughter's first words returning home were that her teacher looks just like her and that she is beautiful. Her gratitude is still felt today for being able to give her daughter a gift she has never otherwise received. As we know, the percentage of K-12 BIPOC students in Minnesota is 37% and steadily increasing each year. Since there are roughly 63,000 educators in our state, if our teachers reflected our students today, we would have 23,300 BIPOC teachers in our classrooms. However, we only have about 3,000 BIPOC educators, one of which is before you, imploring you to pass HF 320 so that we can do more to engage all students and close some of the worst opportunity and achievement gaps in the country. The policies proposed in the Increased Teachers of Color Act are needed to address the multiple interconnected factors contributing to the severe and continuous shortage of BIPOC teachers in schools. This bill helps create a better future of education, one as radiant as that little girl who ran off the bus to tell her mother about our long dark hair, brown eyes, and tan skin. Moments like these, breathtaking and incredible, are happening in our classrooms all across our state. And as the representative of educators in the great state of Minnesota this year, I am so proud and honored to give these amazing moments a voice and to make sure we are heard not only in our classrooms, but beyond. Now it is your turn to give a voice to all of the prospective teachers of color and American Indian teachers waiting to enter and hoping to remain in our classrooms. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. And I believe that we have two students that are going to be ready to testify, and maybe they would both want to come up at this point. One is Glenn Edward Shivers, third grade student, and then also Asamali. You want to go up to the table that now, the two of you together? Get yourself adjusted. And I believe I have Glenn as going first. And so you can make sure that microphone is up by you, and then everybody will be able to hear you. Yep, there you are. And the first thing, would you say your name again so that everybody can hear it?
My name is Glenn Edward Shivers.
Perfect. Thank you very much. All right. Please talk to us.
Yate members, chairs, and members. Yate madam and chairs and members. My name is Glenn Edward Shivers. I am of the Bitterwater clan, born for the Filipino people. Provode of Hangasinan, my maternal grandfather is of the Folded Arms people clan. And my paternal grandfather is of Scottish French descent. I am the 2021-2022 junior grade. I am 8 years old and a third grade student at Onamia Elementary. I have never had a teacher of color in my life. Family is most important, and when I look around at my family, I see myself and where I came from. I also realized that school is important. It is hard when my friends and I feel like our teacher do not look, think, wait, no, I lost my phone, do not look, think, or feel the same way we do. I believe all kids should feel like their school is a family. This is why it is important to have more teachers of color in our school so everyone can feel like their school is a place they can call home.
Thank you very much. Very well done. All right. Awesome, Ali. And lean into that microphone so that we can hear you.
Okay. Madam Chair and members, my name is Osmali Obishakan. I'm a fourth grader at Riverview Elementary School. I'm here to ask that you please increase teachers of color in our school. Let's say there is a new kid in class, and he is black. He may not feel comfortable because he has just moved. He may also not feel comfortable with his new teacher and classmates because they don't look like him. That's how I felt sometimes at my old school in rural Minnesota, where there's not very many people who look like me or have some things in common with my culture. Last year, at my old school, I was sitting with my friend on the bus. All of a sudden, I feel someone poking me on my head. I said, "Please stop." She popped up. It was a preschooler, and she was like, "Oh, you're black. You're poor, and you don't even look nice. You look like poo. You don't have any food or water." And I'm like, "That's not true. We do have food, shelter, and water." She said, "That's not true. You're lying because you just want to be like me." She wouldn't leave us alone, so I told the bus driver, and he said, "Okay, I'll talk to her." But he never did. When I told my bus driver, who was white, they didn't know what to do because he has never experienced like this. My teacher and principal congratulated me for speaking up. This really disturbed me. But when I told my dad, he could relate to what happened because he was bullied due to racism. A similar incident happened at my new school where a friend was being excluded because of her race. The teachers handled it right away and had us meet with the school counselors so they can help us out with our feelings. At my new school, they know how to handle difficult situations because there are more teachers of color. Please pass the Teachers of Color Act so more students can feel happy in their school. Thank you.
Thank you. That was just perfect. Thank both of you so much for being with us today. We really, really appreciated hearing your testimony. Thank you. And now we will turn to our next testifier, Siddharth Kazula, would be next, and on deck is Marcera Dunbar. If you can identify yourself for the records and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Siddharth Kazula, and I'm a senior at Wayzata High School. Thank you to the Madam Chair and members of the committee for providing with this opportunity to testify in support of HF 320. In addition to as a senior at Wayzata High School, I also serve as Congressional District 3's representative on the Minnesota Youth Council, and am representing Minnesota as one of the delegates at the United States Senate Youth Program. Over the past 13 years attending the Wayzata School District, I've never been taught by a teacher who resembles my appearance. While this lack of representation produces a wide range of issues, including discouraging BIPOC students like myself from pursuing a career in education during the nation's worst teacher shortage, I'm here today to specifically address this issue's effect on receiving a well-rounded education, highlighting the true diversity of human experience, especially in ethnic studies. From endless analyses of George Washington's farewell address to detailed debates on Jackie Kennedy's impact on 60s fashion, my American historical education emphasizes the stories of a select few. We're taught to trace the trajectory of our own paths from the experiences and expertise of few notable figures. Although there's undeniable value in learning from American realpolitics, we lose the diversity, cultural nuances, and unique stories that make up our shared history. Last year, my school was just one of 50 schools across the entire nation to participate in the College Board's exclusive Advanced Placement, or AP African American Studies pilot. This means that my school provides feedback and tests the AP African American Studies curriculum before the class is implemented on a more widespread scale across the nation. As someone interested in pursuing a degree in history and social studies, I was thrilled when I received this exciting opportunity to gain exposure to some of history's most marginalized perspectives. However, the teacher my school decided to hire for this inaugural class was white. On the first day of class, rather than delving into the true history of ancient Africa in Unit 1, my teacher explained why she should not be leading this class. Although I greatly enjoy the contents of this class and learning about these invaluable perspectives from my amazing teacher, if Minnesota's largest public high school of nearly 3,800 students is unable to provide the perspective from an African-American teacher to teach a class concerning African-American studies, then just imagine the prevalence of this issue across schools within the Twin Cities area in greater Minnesota. Bypassing HF 320, students like myself can gain valuable exposure and learn ethnic studies from underrepresented teachers who provide invaluable perspectives on crucial social issues. It is vital to provide these perspectives of teachers of color in classroom instruction, which is why HF 320 should be passed. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Masara Dunba, who I believe is also in person right now. And then after that, we'll be returning to remote testimony. And Mariah Venezuela would be the first on our Zoom. And maybe we'll go to the Zoom testimony now. So we have, we'll do a series of Zoom testimony, Mariah Venezuela, and then Mr. Mohammed, I think after that, would be our two remote testifiers. If you can hear us, please identify yourself.
I can
for
hear
the
you.
Record.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can. And if you would identify yourself and then proceed with
Hello,
your testimony.
Hello, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Mariah Valenzuela, and I'm a senior at South High, and I will be attending Carleton College this fall as a QuestBridge scholar. My long-term career goal is to reform curriculum, and before I reach that step, I'm aspiring to be a math or ethnic studies teacher to get firsthand experience in the classroom. My education pathway, Grow Your Own Classes, I took during my junior and senior year were the only years I got educated on my Native American heritage and my peers' cultural backgrounds from a BIPOC teacher. As a future educator, I find this unacceptable. I think we should have more opportunities for students to be taught their cultural identity and in their general classroom and curriculum. I feel passionate about this. I have been advocating on the district and community level because students of color have internalized the racism that's been pervasive in their education, thinking they aren't as smart or that we second guess our answers. It's been harder to build and maintain relationships with my white teachers because of these types of experiences in my other classes. I am Native American, and the start of being indigenous in education was to strip away our culture, language, and identity. That created generational trauma that led to substance abuse, homelessness, loss of culture, and low graduation rates. The Bureau of Indian Affairs sourced that 29% to 36% of Native students drop out of schools from grades 7 to 12. Those rates only increase when students lack an understanding of their own Native culture. A white teacher can't teach me about my own indigenous identity and my traditional ways. It's created such a long-term effect that many indigenous people reject the notion of the institution of education. The increased Teachers of Color Act will not only benefit BIPOC students, but BIPOC educators as well. It will allow relationships to form, and it informs us of the identities lost. This act will address institutional racism as it impacts Native Americans and other students of color and allow for ethnic study courses to be offered throughout the state. Thank you. I appreciate you guys for listening.
We appreciate you. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Mr. Mohammed, I believe. Are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, if you can identify yourself for the record, and please proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Adwaha Mohammed, and I'm 17 years old. I'm a student at South High in Minneapolis, and I want to be an ESL teacher. I was born in Yemen, where I lived there most of my life for 10 years, and then I moved to Somalia in Kenya, and I speak Arabic, Somali, and English. In 2017, when I moved to the United States, I started school in the seventh grade. It was hard for me because it was a new country and I didn't speak the language. It was a new world for me because of the snow and the people. I remember my first day at school. I went to the bus stop and I took the wrong bus and I arrived at the wrong school. I was there for 30 minutes along until a staff member who spoke to my asking me if I needed help. This is so important to have someone who speaks the language because it helps students understand what's going on and get them help if they need it. I think it is important to have teachers of color teaching me because it motivates me and inspires me. I am more comfortable asking questions to teachers of color because a white teacher that I had have never been comfortable teaching about topics, race, and ethnicity. I am currently taking a college course credit called Ethnic Studies at Southside and it's taught by a teacher of color. She's not afraid of addressing anti-racism issues that most teachers will not talk about in their classrooms. And she includes Black studies, Native studies, Latinx and Asian, and about Muslim people in every unit that we do. I only had two teachers of color since my seventh grade, and they made me feel and seem and care for. They have made me want to be a teacher who helps immigrant students just like they helped me and my family when we moved to this country. The school should be a safe environment for students, a place they feel they belong to and validate diversity. I want to be the educator that provide this for them. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And our final remote testifier, Angelica Tolaba Olaji. If you can hear us, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Angelica Tolaba Olaji, and I'm a licensed teacher in ESL and social studies and a coordinator for the Education Pathway Program at South High School in Minneapolis. I'm testifying today to support the Increased Teachers of Color Act, House File 320. Minneapolis Public Schools was one of the recipients of the Grow Your Own and Intro to Education grants last year. We had 38 participants in our year-long Intro to Education course, and now we have close to 60 students. There are several reasons why so many students are interested in our program. We have two teachers of color as instructors, and we focus on culturally sustaining practices, anti-racist pedagogy, and we center BIPOC experiences. I'll quote one of my students, quote, "Because we discuss subjects that aren't typically covered in classrooms, this has represented a safe space for me at school," unquote. Another student said, "My GPA has increased as a result of being in the program. It's helped me see additional prospects in life. I also started paying attention in my other classes, and many challenging concepts became more clear," unquote. There are so many benefits for both BIPOC and white students when they have BIPOC teachers. Many have told me I'm their first teacher of color. In a school district that has 65% students of color, and in a city that's a haven for immigrants and refugees, and a strong history of the American Indian movement, our teachers of color and indigenous teachers should reflect that number too. In reality, our district has a 16% gap that is higher than the state of Minnesota. Minnesota as a whole has a 30% gap, and in Minneapolis, there is a 46% racial and ethnic diversity gap between students and teachers. Due to institutional racism and the lack of process to address hostile work environments, our district has had a hard time retaining our BIPOC teachers. In Minneapolis, close to 200 teachers of color have left or have been fired in the last few years, compared to 48 teachers of color who's been laid off in the last 15 years. There is a dire need to look at our performance evaluation process that disproportionately disciplines our BIPOC staff, and we need to address our practices that create a challenging work environment that contribute to this horrendous attrition rates of our BIPOC teachers. We deserve positive learning and work environments that validate, affirm, and embrace us as BIPOC teachers and recognize our cultural and community strengths that are essential for the well-being of our students families, and other BIPOC coworkers. It is not enough for the school district to recruit BIPOC teachers, but there has to be concerted efforts to retain us as well. And that starts with identifying the institutional racism that exists in our policies and practices. MPS has a commitment to equity and inclusion. Passing this act will help them put meaningful action in the strategic plan that they speak so much of. I wholeheartedly support House File 320. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Those are the testifiers that were part of our presentation in the bill. There are a number of people have signed up for public testimony, and I'm just wondering, of the people that have signed up for public testimony, will you be able to return? And I'm sure some of you will, definitely, when we bring out the bill again. But if there would be inconvenient for you, I think that we would still have a couple minutes and we can hear your testimony now. Okay, go for it. And if you can identify yourself.
I'm two people, so that would
say. Yeah, that's right. Wait, we just saw you. Identify yourselves together. And thank you. Thank you for closing us out today.
Thank you so much. Okay. Thank you very much. I'm so glad I have this opportunity to address you one more time. Again, I'm Paula Cole from Educators for Excellence Minnesota, also in representation of Latino Lead. And I'm also a former teacher, and I will be speaking from my heart again during this one and tell you that. In 2014, I conducted some research when I was a member of Educators for Excellence Minnesota, landing on teacher diversity and how we needed to recruit, improve induction, and also retention practices. I was a teacher of 7 years. If the things on this list had been part of the environment at my district, I probably would still be teaching right now. So thank you so much for doing this. Also, I am so thrilled because, especially in the removal of barriers for licensure, last year's teacher action team came to all of you and talked to you about removing barriers from those examinations for our members who have gone through teacher prep programs, and it's just like heartwarming to see them written here and just really showing our members that it matters when they call their legislators and they talk about their problems. So I just want to say we are in support, both Latino Lead and Educators for Excellence. Support for this. Thank you to Talkaid as well. We have been partnering with them also from day one. The addition of not only recruitment but also induction and retention is very powerful in the most transformative I've seen it through the years. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Glad to hear you today. And others that have signed up for public testimony will be able to continue with that when we return. And with that, I'm going to, yes, Representative Keeler.
I just want to say one thing before the littles that testified today leave, because I'm sure they're not going to come back. Again, I've said this before, it is absolutely beautiful to see our next generation stand up and advocate for themselves. And it is even more powerful as an individual who walked through 4 degrees and never saw a teacher at the front of the classroom who looked like me, and I've shared it here many times, you know, what that led me to is to really believe that I was disposable and unseen and unvalued in this space. And it gives me a whole lot of hope to see individuals who are 7, 8, 9 years old showing up in these really scary spaces and advocating for us. This is the future of Minnesota, and it is absolutely beautiful, and we have to listen to the voices of the kids who are here for all of us. So thank you for your courage to do this. It is terrifying for some of us to sit in these spaces and have these conversations. And so I just wanted to make sure that you guys heard that and you see that from us telling you all thank you, and you are the future of Minnesota, and we are really bright.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Keeler, for expressing what we all feel today. And thank you for everybody that came, everybody that testified remotely. We're all enriched by hearing you, seeing you, and we're grateful for it. But we also have to do the... So Representative Keeler renews her motion to have House File...
320.
Oh. Just lay it over. I mean, we're laying it over. Oh, okay. All right. Sorry. I'm going to get corrected here. So we're just late. Okay. Yeah. So we're going to continue hearing this bill when we return. It's laid over.
Just the chair moves to lay over.
The chair moves to lay over. So I won't turn to Representative Keogh. The chair moves to lay over the bill, and we'll continue with public testimony and with member discussion. Thank you, Representative Hassan. And with that, we are adjourned.